The hour of 10:15, having arrived, we'll call the House Tax Committee to order. Members, we have a full agenda today. We'll start out with House File 2564, a Zerwas bill. So, Representative Zerwas, if you could please join us. I believe you have a witness. And then we have some other folks here. We'll see where this takes us here. So, with that, welcome, Committee Representative Zerwas. We do not have a quorum at this point, but as soon as we do, Representative Zerwas, is the DE1 amendment an author's amendment?
Oh, yes.
Okay, Representative Zerwas, what we would do is we would just pop that on there quick so the bill's in the shape you'd like it. So if you could please describe your bill as if the amendment has already been added on to the bill. And then just to kind of get a lay of the land here, how many folks do you have to testify on behalf of the bill?
Just Mr. McAlpin.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
And then is there anyone that wishes to testify with concerns on the bill? Does the department wish to testify in either for or against the bill? Not this time. Okay, thank you, sir. Okay, with that, please present your bill.
Mr. Chairman, members, I don't often get to the Tax Committee, but it's great to be here, and it's great to be here with a bill like this that looks to help rural ambulance services. This issue was first brought to my attention last year as session was wrapping up, as individual rural ambulance associations around the state were being contacted by the Department of Revenue wishing to look in and audit previous year's payment of the 2% provider tax. And I won't go too far into the weeds, Mr. Chairman, but it was understood by most rural ambulance services that they were not included in the 2% provider tax. However, once a medic came on board and that was no longer classified by revenue as a volunteer ambulance service, it was determined by revenue, although not effectively communicated to the Rural Ambulance Association or Rural Ambulance Services, that they would then qualify for that 2% tax. And so we started getting contacted by ambulance associations around the state when revenue was making contact with them, wanting to look multiple years into the past to try to collect previously unsolicited, uncollected provider tax withholds. So we were getting contacted by ambulance services who were receiving bills from revenue, some in excess of $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, upwards of $100,000 in back taxes, in some instances late penalties. I want to commend the department. They've been great to work with. Mr. McAlpin and I began working immediately with revenue, who very shortly after our first few conversations decided to limit how far back they would look and then look at just absence of payment and waive any late fees or late penalties. And so they were very nice to work with. As we move forward, we certainly didn't believe it was the intent of the legislature to have voluntary ambulance services be subject to the 2% sick tax. And so we drafted legislation to exempt ambulance services with a certain amount of runs out of qualifying for paying the 2% provider tax. We were later told by CMS and other folks that that was a problem with some federal rules, and the only way to do that would be to exempt all ambulance services out of the provider tax. And so that's what our bill, our amendment in health reform did, was to exempt all ambulance services out of the bill. And so that's kind of the background on the bill, Mr. Chairman, and I can turn it over to Mr. McAlpin to walk through the details.
Okay. So thank you, Representative Zerwas. So basically what we're looking at here is giving the department some clarification as to how this should work. And
in the DE1?
In the bill as it would be amended.
Mr. Chairman, members, the bill originally was set up as an exemption bill because we were going to exempt out rural ambulance services. Then we ran into an issue with CMS, so we said we'll exempt out everyone. This amendment in the DE-1, rather than exempting out ambulance services, goes back to the beginning. It just takes out ambulance providers from the very beginning. So it just takes it out of statute. Instead of having an exemption, it just isn't including them from the beginning.
Okay. So we do have a quorum, so I'll officially call the House Tax Committee to order. I will move House File 2564. I will now move the H2564 DE-1 amendment. Any discussion? This is to get it in the shape that the author would like. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have the bill as amendment of force. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chairman, members, Buck McAlpin with Minnesota Ambulance Association. Representative Zerwas did an excellent job, like always, explaining the issue. The couple things I'll add is, many of you remember O.J. Doyle that lobbied with me years ago, passed away this last summer. He knew this was an issue, and we've talked about it for years, because of how we're certified as paramedics, EMTs, and first responders in Minnesota. So this bill that we're actually fixing here does two things. We have 850 fire departments in Minnesota, and if you're a certified responder, if Representative Hackbarth and I go out on a first responder call and we get paid an $8 stipend, we technically owe the 2% tax on that. So revenue has enforced it correctly the last year as this has came up. And Representative Zerwas did a great job explaining the CMS issue. It's a statewide conformity issue that we'd have to apply for a waiver, so it was recommended we just did the exemption statewide. So what this language does is exempt and totally take out the first responder piece that has never paid it, and then it also exempts the ambulances statewide who pay it, whether you're fire, municipal, privately owned, however that works. We know that most of our still our rural ambulances have local tax support anyway, so we kind of thought it was a little bit of an issue that we're paying a tax for a tax when we tax the local community to provide the service. So the amendment they sent over yesterday takes care of this problem.
Okay, thank you very much. And you brought up a name from the past who did a tremendous amount for ambulance services across the state, O.J. Doyle. I miss that guy. Great guy. Okay, so with that, Representative Zerwas, then we'll go to member questions. There wasn't any other testimony from the audience here. So, Representative Zerwas?
Mr. Chairman, members, just briefly, we did just, I think about 10 minutes before committee started, get the revenue note on the bill that shows for 2017 about a $4.2 million impact and about a $4.4 million impact in 2018. And just for members' reference, currently this is not being paid into the general fund. This is being paid into the health care access fund, which is already set to sunset and go away in 2019. And then the other comment that I would make is the fiscal note, which I don't believe you guys have, but we have available actually for the general fund, shows a net savings because of some MA rates changes. And so I think it's about a $400,000 net savings to the general fund.
Thank you, Representative Zerwas. Representative Barrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members, Representative Zerwas. Just wanted to say on the record that it's a great bill you have before you, and I support it wholeheartedly. There are some EMS people from my from the state here, a lot of them, a couple from my district. First of all, they do such a great job in doing a piece of work that is very important, and a lot of people don't recognize how difficult the job is for many reasons, including all they have to deal with on a daily basis. So to them, I commend them for what they do regarding this bill. The folks who are here from my district mentioned how it has cost them up until now a couple hundred thousand dollars that they have to pass on, and they don't have the money necessarily to do that. So I think if we can change this as quickly as possible, I think that's the best thing for our state. So thanks for bringing the bill to us. I appreciate it.
Chair Carlson.
Yeah, just a quick question of Mr. McAlpine. Are you no longer with North?
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, I am with North, yes.
Oh, okay. The reason I asked that, I have a little history with him having represented North, but
I have quite
our agenda did say North Memorial Healthcare, and then when you introduced yourself, you didn't reference that. Not a political question, but just curious as to, so you're wearing two hats, basically, then.
Mr. McAlpin?
Correct, Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson.
No, okay, that's all.
Chair
Thank
Carlson.
You. That's all I was interested in.
Other questions for members? With that, Chair Earhart.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm just wondering, I'm sure this is a worthwhile cause, but we got a lot of providers of health care in one form or another that are being taxed like this, and they're passing it along to all of us, and we really should not be commending this particular organization for crying about it, but we should also look at the doctors and the dentists and so forth that are having this attached to them, and we should find another form of providing the money we need for men care and so forth, instead of this is really something that goes beyond this, is what I'm saying, and we should be thinking about that. If we're going to cut a tax, we got to make it a clean break. Instead of waiting until 2019 when it's supposed to phase out, we should be thinking about it now. Just a passing comment.
Okay. Thank you, and I would comment that I believe that a lot with this bill, and I look at it a bit differently, Chair Hart, is basically giving clarification to the Department of Revenue as to what I believe the legislative intent was in the first place. And so I think we're cleaning it up so that, and I'm not criticizing the department at all, because they had an interpretation, and we're just going to try and help clear it up for them. Any other comments or questions from members? With that, thank you very much, Representative Zerwas. I will move House File Number 2564 as amended, be later for possible inclusion in omnibus tax bill. Thank you very much, and thank you, Mr. McAlpin, and thank all your members for all that they do for us. I had a ride with them one time. We won't go into that. It was very fast. It was very fast. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Representative Zerwas. Thank you, Mr. McAlpin, and all of the ambulance providers in the state. We thank you very much. Item next, House File 3725, a Vogel bill. And I believe that there is an amendment. So, members, I will move House File 3725. I will now move the amendment in your packets, H372582. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted. We now have House File 3725 as amended before us. Welcome to the Tax Committee, Representative Vogel. Have you had a bill before the Tax Committee before?
Mr. Chair, I have not. In fact, the duty of providing treats is being done to you right now, and I would hope that you'd enjoy some sweetness both for from the treats as well as the receptiveness to this bill.
I love glazers. Thank you. Thank you. Well, let's make sure everybody gets one here. Representative Ansells, you want to go that way? Okay, I was a little concerned there, Representative Vogel. We may have had a layover of the bill. First, whatever. Okay, with that, if you could please present your bill to us, and then we'll go to your witnesses. On House File 3725, is there anyone else that wishes to testify on behalf of the bill? Is there anyone that wishes to testify with concerns? Does the department wish to make comments on this bill? No? Okay. I don't know if you know what that means in this committee, but it means that we get right to the point and get to the next bill is what it means, because nobody's opposed to it. So, Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bill is rather straightforward. It's requesting some small assistance to the city of Elko New Market for the installation of the water treatment plant that was necessitated through health standards, and because of the desire on the city's part to get the matter cleared up right away, there was not time to get the tax exemption that we're hoping can be done through this bill. And I have two testifiers here, both from the city of Elko New Market, that can explain the technicalities.
Hey, please state your name and who represents for the record, please, sir.
My name is Thomas Terry. I'm the city administrator for the city of Elko New Market.
How do you spell your last name?
T as in Thomas, E-R-R-Y.
Oh, that's easy. Now, were you originally with Elko or New Market?
New Market.
You were actually. Is there still a little bit of rivalry there? Is it pretty cool?
It's one community.
Why one community?
Yep.
Well, then why doesn't it have one name? Now it's got three: Elko, New Market.
Well, it would be too difficult to change the signs on I-35, so we just stayed with Elko New Market.
Cool. Very nice community. I love that place. Okay, please give us your testimony.
As the representative indicated, we are seeking approval of House File, which would provide a sales tax exemption for the construction of our new water treatment facility. We need to construct the facility in order to comply with the Federal Safe Water Act primary drinking standards for radium and gross alpha particles. The level of radium and gross alpha particles in our drinking water are high. Radium is a radioactive isotope that's naturally occurring in bedrock wells. Over a certain level, it's been determined that it increases the risk of cancer. Compliance by the as mandated by the Minnesota Department of Health is required by the end of 2017. To solve the problem, we constructed a $9.8 million central water treatment facility. Of that construction of that facility, $3.8 million of that was materials which were subject to Minnesota sales tax. We are requesting exemption to that in the amount of an estimated $250,000. The facility was constructed without grants. It's being paid for by the citizens and the businesses of Elko Newmarket, and has resulted in an average of $22 a month increase for the typical household in the community. As the representative indicated, this was a health issue. There did not provide adequate opportunity to get the exemption, and we are seeking limited relief regarding the project, which is funded by the public and borne entirely by our residents through receiving the sales tax exemption.
Thank you, Mr. Terry. And Mr. Michael, in the current conference report for our House File 848, is there any similar provisions, or maybe Ms. Dalton? That would be a Ms. Dalton question. Where there's any sales tax exemptions?
Mr. Chair, I know that there are sales tax exemptions. Whether we have any for something similar to this, I'd have to go back and look.
Okay, let's look at that later. Okay. Thank you. The other gentleman, or is he a resource? Or
I'm just a resource. My name is Mark Nagel, N-A-G-E-L. I'm the Assistant City Administrator.
Okay, well, welcome to the Tax Committee, sir. With that, any questions for members? Chair Carlson?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, with your question there, that does kind of put on the table how we're moving forward with this bill and perhaps others that are in conference committee. And I recognize that Ms. Dalton is going to get back to the committee as to whether what's in conference committee is retroactive or not, which is essentially this bill. But it does raise the question how we're going to move forward generally if, in fact, it is already in conference committee with these bills that we're hearing plus some others.
Right. And I don't have a definite answer for you at this point, and so I'm not exactly sure how this all proceeds. I will say that I've spent more time reading House and joint rules than I ever have in my life, because I do want to make this, I want to do it right, and so that it can stand up. And so exactly how we do that yet has not been determined, but as soon as it is, we'll let both sides of the aisle know, because I just want to make sure that we're abiding by House rules and joint rules, and that we can, you know, you have in the conference committee various issues, and so if they relate to that, you know, how does that work? And so we're still sorting through all that. I wish I had an answer to that right now, but I don't. But that's why I was asking the question. Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Manzi actually found one that's very similar. It's from municipally owned wastewater treatment facility in the city of Mora, and that is currently in the bill.
And there's also some general construction areas too. So
Mr. Chairman, on that point, then is
yes,
that
Chair
retroactive?
Carlson.
The Newmark or the one you referenced,
Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, it is retroactive back to January 1, 2015.
Chair Carlson.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that bit of information. It still puts on the table, though, how we're going to move forward with bills generally that are either in conference committee or not, in what the joint rules tell us about new issues that haven't passed one body or the other.
Right.
That's apparently what you're researching.
That is correct.
Yeah. And Mr. Chairman, I've been there and done that, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
I mean, I'm a very creative person, but I also want things to stand up. Chair Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Terry and Mr. Nagel, can you outline again for us, so as I understand, and the state government came along and said, you shall build this facility. And how much was the amount? I think you said $8 million or something like that.
The total construction cost was $8.6 million. Total cost overall was $9.8
million. Chair Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it was $9.8 million overall. Mm-hmm. So Mr. Terry and Mr. Nagel, had it not been for state government stepping in and saying, Alco Newmarket, you will build this facility, would you have built it otherwise?
No.
Mr. Terry?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, no. We would not have built the facility at that time unless it was mandated by Minnesota Department of Health Standards.
Chair Drazkowski?
So, Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Terry. I mean, in your city, had you noticed anybody dying at a higher rate than anywhere else in the state?
Not that we're aware of.
Chair Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Terry, Mr. Nagel. Members, here you have it. The effect of a big government being foisted upon the taxpayers of the people of this small town. Similar thing, Mr. Chair, happened in a city in my district, the city of Goodview. Also, the big Minnesota Department of Health came in with its talons out, telling the people of Goodview that they had to build a water treatment facility because of radium. Again, they as well would have never built the facility had it not been for the Department of Health forcing them to do so. They did not get in some of the exemptions they're seeking here, but I very much support this bill, Mr. Chair. And members, I think as we work and bring forward bills and hopefully find ways to vote against more of these mandates that are placed on local governments that they would not otherwise impose themselves. We need to keep in mind the effects that it have on local government, and I'm sorry that state government has done this to the people of your fine city. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other comments, questions? Okay, with that, I will renew my motion that House file 3725, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative Vogel. Thank you for the treats and snacks. Thank you, Mr. Terry, Mr. Nagel. We will now go to House File 3205. Thank you, Representative Vogel.
Thank you.
Item next, House File 3205, and we have an author's amendment. Representative Smith, the amendment is yours. It's the A1 amendment?
Yes, it is, Mr. Chair.
Okay, to get the bill in the shape the author would like, I will move House File 3205. I'll now move the H3205A1 amendment. All in favor say aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Okay, we now have the bill as amended before us, House File 3205 as amended. And, oh, we're doing well today. You should schedule more freshman bills.
Yeah, Mr. Chair?
Representative Smith.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Yes, freshly made donuts from the best district in Minnesota this morning, sir.
Wow.
What, Wright County?
Okay. Okay, thank you very much. Okay. So, first of all, before we get going, how many folks like to testify on behalf of this bill? Just so I have on my list, no one, but we will. I mean, you don't have to feel like you need to. Let me ask this question first. Is there anyone in the audience which testify with concerns on this bill? Okay, you probably got too many testifiers up there, Representative Smith. With that, is there any comments the department would like to make on this bill?
I don't think so.
Not at this time. Possibly be on deck there in case you want to say something. Okay, please present your bill, and then we'll take your testimony and then questions, and then we'll go from there. Representative Smith, welcome to the Tax Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. This bill deals with the inequity in taxing food that is sold in a store and also a vending machine, the same food. This bill would make that taxation the same. And with that, I have some testimony that I'd like to offer, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, sir. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
My name is Steve Marks. I am the owner of a company, Royal Vending, in Maple Grove, Minnesota.
Welcome to the committee, sir, Mr. Marks.
Thank you very much.
Please provide your testimony.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, again, my name is Steve Marks. I'm the president of Royal Vending. We're located in Maple Grove. We run a 10-route vending machine operation covering the greater part of Minneapolis and St. Paul. I also currently serve on the board of directors of the National Automatic Merchandiser Association, NAMA, and am the president of the Minnesota Automatic Merchandiser Association, MAMC. I'm here to testify in support of HF3205. MAMC is an affiliated state council of NAMA, representing many small businesses that provide vending and office coffee services to thousands of Minnesotans each day and employing hundreds of workers in the state of Minnesota. We greatly appreciate Representative Smith and Kosnick authoring this important measure. As vending operators and small business owners in the state of Minnesota, we are seeking parity with other Minnesota retailers that do not pay sales tax on the same product we sell through vending machines. Pursuant to Minnesota statute, all food products that are sold through vending machines are subject to sales tax. In other retail locations, grocery stores, convenience stores, etc., only prepared food, soft drinks, and candy are subject to sales tax. Due to the disparity in the law, vending machine operators are forced to either absorb the sales tax or pass it on to its consumers. Absorbing the sales tax hurts the bottom line for an industry that is comprised of many small businesses and that operates on slim profit margins. Passing the tax on to the consumer means increasing the tax burden on working people, students, and military personnel in the state who make up a large percentage of the vending industry's customers. Our businesses are put at great disadvantages to our competition, cafeterias, convenience stores, grocery stores, etc. If a consumer goes into a convenience store or other retail location and purchases some of the following items...
You can pass them around. Get a little better look at them. Right before lunch.
Feel free, yes.
Mr. Marks, who does the vending machines down here in the basement?
I'm assuming, and I don't know for sure, but it's probably the Randolph Shepherd Act, which is the blind operators. It's a federal program that gives them first right refusal to any state and federal buildings.
Could you contact them so you can get some sun chips down there?
I will take care of that for you, sir.
Now, is Marks M-A-R-X or M-A-R-K-S?
M-A-R-X.
M-A-R-X. Thank you, sir.
Yep.
Okay, so what have you got here?
So many of these items that you see in front of you, all of them, in fact, were bought at a convenience store. And none of these items have sales tax on them. However, in a vending machine, every one of these items has sales tax. That's, yes. So the vending machine operator who cannot realistically compete and sell the items for more than their competition needs to remit sales tax, which, you know, would be hidden, or passed on to consumers. Furthermore, many items that have this unfair sales tax are healthier options, which makes it very difficult for the vending company to offer these items at competitive prices or even at all. The imposition of this tax is also difficult due to the fact that vending prices can only be raised in nickel increments. Most of the vending machines still only accept coins and currency, although there are machines that accept debit and credit cards. Nearly 90% of all sales are still cash. Should this measure become law, our industry would have the means to reinvest in our businesses in the form of capital and technology improvements and increased sales. This reinvestment in business and economic activity will undoubtedly have a positive impact on the state by increasing tax revenues through those investments. We urge the committee to vote aye on HF3205.
Thank you, sir. Any other testifiers? Representative Smith, or would you like to go to member questions?
Member questions, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, member questions. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to the testifiers, so it sounds like the vending machines will have some taxable and non-taxable issues. Is that going to create any kind of issues for you for keeping them tracked and dealt with?
Mr. Marks?
That's a fabulous question. I appreciate that. For show-and-tell purposes, I happen to bring a device that we use at our company and many vending machine companies do use throughout the Minneapolis, St. Paul, and the country. This is known in the industry as a telemeter device. All of our vending machines have these installed on them. We're able to see real-time data transactions as an actual item sells. We know every dime that went into the machine. We know every Snickers bar that sold out of the machine. We could easily differentiate between a bottle of water and a Diet Coke, let's say. So to your answer, yes, we have that ability.
If we're operators, Mr. Mark, you can track, like, when I'm at the vending machine, how low your inventory just got?
That is correct.
Wow. Okay. Representative Petersburg? Okay, Representative Mansell?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Smith, would your bill extend the exemption to nursing homes, public elementary schools, other public facilities?
Representative Smith?
Mr. Chair, Representative, there was an amendment placed in the Senate file which did add to the nursing home exemption, or to the nursing home specifically, and that's an issue that that I think we need to look a little bit, well, it's an issue that we do support for the bill including that.
Representative Ansels?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not quite understanding your response. Is it your intent to exempt vending machines in public elementary schools?
Representative Smith.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes.
Representative Ansels.
Fine.
Other questions? Representative McDonald?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Perhaps for Council, just curious what's the history of this, why that there was no exemption for those items in the vending machine, but there was exemptions sold not through that fashion.
Ms. Dalton, why did you do that?
Why did I do that? Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I really wish I had a better memory than I have. I'm really realizing it's starting to go. This actually dates back to the 2000s, I believe, when we started actually taxing all food sold through vending machines, and I do think it was an issue of auditing and keeping track at that time. But somebody from the Vending Machine Association may actually have more remembrance of it, since it directly affected them, and they might want to comment on it.
Mr. Marks, any comments to the McDonald question?
You know, I would probably like to almost, if I could have another one of my individuals I brought, maybe talk about that a little bit in more detail than I might be able to, if that's okay.
That'd be great. I bring up whoever you'd like there.
I would introduce Mr. Mark Young to the committee.
Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
My name is Mark Young, and I represent Apple Automatic Food Service. It's a business I started 25 years ago. We're a full-line vending company. And about a dozen years ago, I don't know exact time, and I think Mr. Ayer, Representative Earhart, helped bring forward this bill about 12 years ago. With the sales tax exemption issue, and then we were unsuccessful here with the legislation. So we went through the court system and tried to push our inequity issue through the courts, and we went through the district court, then up through the Supreme Court, Minnesota Supreme Court, and basically the ruling from the Supreme Court was go back to your legislation and have that inequity. And that inequity fixed there. And so here we are again a dozen years later with the same issue of unfairness. One question that was asked earlier by one of the representatives is that the consumer doesn't see the sales tax, and that's correct. But us as a company has to pay it. So a bottle of water that we sell at $1.50 is basically we're selling it at $1.38. And that means the unfairness is the grocery store or the convenience store is selling it for $1.50, and we're put in an unfair advantage for water, for milk, for 100% juices, for cheeses. And then you talked to one of the other questions you asked was about how we track. Well, I don't know if you guys are aware of the sales tax situation. I'm sure you are. We have the St. Paul. We have Minneapolis. We have the stadium tax. We should be getting season tickets for the 0.015% that the sales tax called, because it was inclusive in our cost. And that was another, in my business, it's almost $3,000 a year that we're paying for that sales tax for the Twin Stadium, and then the other 0.25% on there. So we have machines. Myself, we have machines through 9 counties. And we have different sales tax basically for about every county. So with that, we're able to No, exactly. At this city, it's 7.05%, or at this city, it's 7.852%, or whatever it is. So when you talk about the tracking and things like that, it's about the simplest thing that we can do is to figure out how to track items. We can track it on the way in, we can track it on the way out, how we sell it, where we sell it, exactly when we sell it. So we have all types of technology and everything else, and it's very advanced in the vending business now of how we track it. But we're tracking sales tax already like that. So per machine, at a location, and how it is. So here it would just be basically either converting and doing some type of programming with our system to basically automatic do it, or to do simple Excel spreadsheets that we're kind of doing right now in addition to all the counties for the sales tax. So,
Representative McDonald?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think a question perhaps for Ms. Dalton. So it sounds like we're really inconsistent in terms of the taxation of, quote, snack foods, depending on whether you buy it in a grocery store or a convenience store or through a vending machine. Would I be correct in that? Because, you know, in the grocery store, certain food items are taxed depending on their composition. But it sounds like some of those foods that would be non-taxed in the grocery store are being taxed through vending machines.
Ms.
Mr. Chair, Representative Loon, that is correct. The definition for taxable food includes all food sold in a vending machine. So there is differences. Now, having said that, there's also differences in if you go to a Subway and you buy a bag of chips at a Subway store, that bag of chips would be taxable there even though it would not be taxable in a 7-Eleven because it's part of what is defined as prepared food. So there are some ambiguities that exist anyhow, but I believe what this bill is trying to do is to treat them the way that they, that if you went to buy this stuff in a 7-Eleven, if it's not taxable there, they don't want it taxed in the vending machine.
Yeah, Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And that's very interesting because we took a tour a few months ago at the downtown Minneapolis Target, and we went into the snack bar aisle like Nutri-Grains and Power Bars and all those things, and you look at two bars, boxes, and a problem that Target and other retailers have is this taxable, isn't it taxable, and you have to actually get down into the ingredients, and there's some trigger that if it's flour, it's not, if it there's no flour, it is on a Tuesday in leap year type of thing. And so that, you know, if we could possibly bring some clarification to some of these things, we might want to do that. Ms. Dalton, does this mess up our compact agreement at all?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, no, we're allowed to pick how we tax food and vending machines for the streamlined sales tax.
Okay. Chair Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, going back to Mr. Marks' testimony, you indicated that some of the products in the machines, you absorb the cost, and you used the example of the water, you know, where you're apparently absorbing that with that particular product. But you said there were other products that the sales tax apparently is built in, and so my question is, and then I'll have a follow-up, but what happens to the pricing now? Who's going to be the winner, the consumer? If you get, because it's about $3 million a year is what the fiscal note shows, is it going to be the consumer or is it going to be the operator that's the winner? And maybe I'm kind of getting into my follow-up question, because if you take the $3 million and our fiscal note says there's about 78 vending machine companies, at the risk of using an average, because I'm sure some are small and some are larger operations, but on average that's $375,000 per company on an average that would be getting to keep, if you will, that money that's normally going into the state coffers. And I'm quite honestly kind of buying into your argument that, you know, the level playing field and all of that, but it does raise the question of what happens to the pricing so that the consumer benefits from this as well.
Mr. Mark?
Well, I can speak for our company, and I would imagine that many of the vending companies, the other 78, and there's more, but that would follow suit throughout the state. The first thing is that the consumer is the one who's going to win. They're going to win because of the fact that there's many items that currently are being subject to sales tax that are of a healthier nature that are very difficult to put into vending machines because we lose our competitiveness that compared to a convenience store or grocery store. In fact, I had the great opportunity on our national association, the NAMA, to visit Michelle Obama's nutritionist, Let's Go Lady, and one of the compelling arguments was the fact that a lot of these healthier items that we would like to put into vending machines cost more, and the consumer is very smart and savvy, and they don't want to spend more for those items. So when we have to pay the sales tax, you know, and subsidize those products to begin with, our prices elevate. So I think the consumer is going to win by us as a vending community being able to offer healthier products in the vending machines easier. Number two, I believe that within our own company, for instance, we already do this now and we would like to extend it, and that would be price differentials. So, for instance, on a bottle of water, in majority of our vending machines, it's less expensive than that of a carbonated soft drink. So we already are doing that, and we would continue to do that. And you would also see when we, every year as an industry, and I've got folks behind me from manufacturers and distributors, we are in an environment that we continue to get price increases upon price increases upon price increases every single year. It would allow us to, with these specific items, keep these prices at the level that they're at and not have to do another price increase so fast, if that answers.
Well, Chair Carlson.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, it raises the comfort level some that the consumer is going to get some benefit out of it. And I understand what Mr. Marks is saying, Mr. Chairman, relative to healthier foods, which is a good outcome. But if you boil it down to dollars and cents for the products that are currently being sold, then there is a... I hate to use the term because we're talking about a level playing field, but a windfall of, on average, with those 78 of 375,000. So I just point that out and be interested in the consumer side of all this. But I'll just stop there, Mr. Chairman, other than to point out with these foods that are going around. I'm a retired teacher, and I had a business person come in as a guest speaker, and he had a very expensive pen, and the students were interested in that pen, and it somehow disappeared as it was going around the classroom. He was passing it around. It turned out to be a joke. One of the kids just kept it, but we had to wait until the bell rang before he finally turned it back in.
Chair Carlson, that's not a laughing matter.
Well, I'm just wondering how much of this food is going to disappear as it goes around, Mr. Chairman.
It will be cleared out of the room by the time we're done.
There's a risk factor of passing things around is all I'm saying, Mr. Chairman, but thank you.
Thanks, Chair Carlson. Any other member discussion? With that, I will renew my motion that House File 3205, as amended, be later for possible inclusion in an omnibus tax bill. Thank you very much, Representative Smith, and to the folks from the vending industry. Thanks for what you do.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Item last, Representative Loon, will move House File 2989, and there are no amendments that I can see, Representative Loon. And members, before we get into the Loon bill, I just want to make a give some congratulations here from myself and from the entire committee to a member of our committee. Representative Moline had her son in the last couple days here, Theodore Moline Norenberg. So we're very excited for her as a member of the committee. Another taxpayer. We love that.
Does that mean we're going to have two little ones here from time to time, ma'am? Does that mean we're going to have two little ones?
Okay, Representative Loon, welcome to your committee. Representative Loon moves House File 2989. If I could get us possibly back in order just a bit, thank you. The gentleman, I started it? I kind of did, didn't I? Okay. So with that being said, Representative Loon, to your bill. Before we get going, you have a couple folks to testify. I have a Zach Robbins and a John Marshalla. Does that sound right?
That's right.
Okay. Is there anyone that wish to testify on behalf of the bill
or with concerns thereof? Okay, the department? Okay. Okay, so with that, Chair Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As members may recall, last year, as part of the jobs omnibus budget bill, we created a new program to help with raising capital for small business. It's referred to as MINVEST, and it basically is an offshoot of what people know as crowdfunding to raise money. But this program actually allows investors to review offerings from small businesses through a portal that's authorized by the Department of Commerce, and to make an investment in a small business and receive an equity stake in that small business in exchange. It is, you know, quite limited in terms of the amount of money that a small business can raise. It's either $1 million or $2 million, depending on various circumstances. And the amount of money, the maximum amount of money an investor may provide or invest in a small business is $10,000. What this bill proposes to do is allow MINVEST to be added to the list of programs available that would be allowed to access the angel investment tax credit. And so with that, I would like to allow my testifiers to tell you more about this and why we think it's important.
Okay, before we do that again, was there anyone who wished to testify in opposition to this bill? Okay, I think you know what that means, Representative Loon. Okay, but before we do that, Representative Simonson moves the minutes of March 31st, 2016. Any additions or corrections? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. We almost had to carry those over. With that being said, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Zach Robbins. I'm an attorney at Winthrop & Weinstein, and I'm a director of MINVEST.org, which is a 501c4 nonprofit that was created to advocate for this new law, MINVEST.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you, Chair. I am here today to talk about the MINVEST securities exemption, which was passed into law in June 2015. The law is presently pending rules from the Department of Commerce, but once effective, will be an excellent way for small companies in this state to raise capital from residents of this state, and that includes both accredited and non-accredited investors. The purpose of this amendment to the Angel Investment Tax Credit is to expand the eligible exemption types under which the law permits tax credit. MINVEST would become the fourth type of exemption or transaction which would be exempt under the law. And I have provided a chart which you may have in front of you. In the interest of time, I'm not going to go through the three current ways in which an investor can receive credit, nor will I go through the fourth way, which is MINVEST, as proposed here today. But in sum, I printed the chart to show that there, in fact, are many similarities between MINVEST and the other exemptions permitted under the law. We are here today to kindly ask for your consideration to permit MINVEST to become the fourth type of exemption under the law, to allow both accredited and non-accredited investors who participate in these offering types to receive credit under the Angel Investment Tax Credit. I will hand it off to John Marshalla, who's here to testify today. Thank you.
Welcome, committee, sir. Can you state your name and who you represent for the record, please?
Yeah, thank you for your time. My name is John Marshalla. I'm the chief operating officer of a startup here in Minnesota called No Sweat. We're a Minnesota Angel Tax Credit qualified business, and we currently manufacture and sell disposable sweat absorbers for any type of hat or helmet, big applications including like hockey, construction, golf, pretty much anyone that wears any kind of headwear on their head. Being that we are, you know, a young company and growing rapidly, we're currently raising $1.1 million under Title III of the Jobs Act, which does only allow us to raise money from accredited investors at this time, and also allows us to advertise publicly. That being said, had we had the opportunity to raise from non-accredited investors under the MINVEST offering, being that I'm 27 years old, a large majority of my network are non-accredited investors that do have the opportunity to invest in certain things but not others for amounts, you know, up under $10,000. as recently as this morning, actually, I met with a potential investor who was very interested in investing in the company, but he was only interested in coming in at about the $5,000 level, given where we currently stand and the fact that, you know, he's not Angel Tax qualified. Because he's not accredited, he, you know, decided not to move forward with that opportunity. So I'm here to, you know, advocate for the fact that, you know, MinVest should be added to the qualified Angel Tax Credit exemption, and, you know, also, you know, under the, you know, taking into consideration that, you know, if accredited investors can receive this credit, I believe that non-accredited investors should be qualified as well.
Thank you. You said you make golf hats?
No, we make that. It's a disposable liner that can go into golf hats or helmets.
Do they currently go into some golf hats?
Yeah.
Like what kind?
I mean, it would go into any kind of baseball cap, golf hat. It's a disposable, and it's an adhesive on the back end, so it sticks inside of the hat.
Well, it's something that you put in.
Yes.
I mean, okay.
Yeah, like a user would use it as an accessory to absorb the sweat, keep it from running down their face.
I don't know if I really need that. When I work out, I usually don't sweat. No, I'm sure it's a fine product, and it's very necessary.
Thank you.
Okay, before we go into member questions, I would like to announce the agenda for tomorrow. The first bill up, we have on the list 3774, an Isaacson bill, 1368, Accretia bill. What's that do? Education credit. And then I have 3785 and 3787. Those are both David's bills, and I'm not sure what they do, but you can look them up if you'd like. With that being said, questions for members? Representative Chair Anderson S.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Loon, I was trying to go through the fiscal note portion. I noticed that it's supposed to be a minimal impact because of the $10,000 threshold, but do you have a ballpark figure of how much this would cost out of the Angel Investor Fund?
Chair Loon.
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, no, we really don't. The because the fiscal note didn't provide any estimate on that, I don't know. And I don't know if Mr. Robbins would have any guesstimate on that as well. As you may know, the program, the MinVest program, is not yet up and running. The Department of Commerce did put forward regulations which last week were sent to the governor's office, so that process is not yet finalized. So until the program is operational, I think it's a little hard to say.
Chair Anderson S.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Loon, I'm also curious on looking at the fiscal note, and notes that the costs are part of minute at deed. So is deed assuming the cost, or is minute assuming the cost?
Chair Loon.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I don't know the answer to that.
The staff, are they
maybe
able to
Mr.
help me?
Mr. Michael or Ms. Dalton? Or Ms. Templin, could you please join us?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal Staff. On the fiscal note, it does say, let me just get to the right page, on page 6 of the fiscal note, at the bottom, number 7, it says that deed would charge minute for the programming cost of $7,000, and that those costs would be offset by the revenue from the increased participation from the expanded investors. So there would be a zero impact overall.
Yeah. Chair Anderson S. Other member questions to the Loon bill? Okay, with that, Chair Loon renews her motion that House File 2989 be later for possible inclusion in an omnibus tax bill. Okay, well, thank you very much, gentlemen. Thank you, Chair Loon. Any other items for the good of the order? Department? Okay. With that, members, we'll see you tomorrow. Good government all the time. We are adjourned.